On this episode of China Unscripted, the human rights abuse that even Amnesty International wouldn't touch. Welcome to China Unscripted. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganeshda.
Are you ready for another lighthearted topic on China Unscripted? Too bad, because today we're going to talk about the exciting practice of organ harvesting. That is, the Chinese Communist Party has created a system to kill dissidents for their organs and then sell those organs to rich people who want organ transplants. Joining us to discuss this issue is the Honorable David Kilgore. He's the former Canadian Secretary of State for Asia and the Pacific, a former parliament member, and a criminal prosecutor for almost 10 years. Now he's a human rights activist, author, and one of the foremost researchers on organ harvesting in China. Thank you for joining us, David.
It's good to be with you, Chris. I just hope that I can make everybody laugh with this topic. Well, I'm one of your biggest fans. I don't know how you manage to be funny all of the time, it seems to me. And you must have very good writers, but you admitted that. So it has nothing to do with you whatsoever. It's just apparently it's Shelley that writes.
Now hold on. I feel I need to correct some inaccuracies in your statement. Yes, I am funny all the time, but that's not all Shelley. I do. Shelley plays a part, a big part.
Okay, all right.
But,
then I'll withdraw part of that statement. Okay, all right.
Overruled. What do they say in courts?
Yeah, Chris was not a prosecutor for 10 years.
But I played one on TV. Anyways, David, please. I think I interrupted your introduction. So.
Well, no. I've been around a while, I have to admit, and I've been in something like 50 countries on this issue now with David Matus. The two of us and Ethan Gutman have traveled around the world a lot. And so there's basically no question we haven't been asked either rudely or politely, and we know we have to be precise. If we make one little error, like the other day I said that if you divided 60,000 transplants a year in China, which is our absolute minimum from our update, which we did and documented very, very carefully in 2016, you come up with 150 people a day are being killed for their organs. And thank goodness I was corrected on that, because from any victim, you can take obviously a lot more than one organ, but as I hope all your listeners know, most organs won't last very long, especially the vital ones like the heart and so on. So, yes, you can perhaps transplant more than one organ from a murdered so-called donor, but it's not many organs you can use from any one donor, because there isn't a patient waiting to have a heart and another patient waiting to have a lung at the sort of particular moment that the person is killed for their organs. So we clarified that carefully, and I'm very glad that's been clarified by the independent tribunal, which is considering this matter.
Okay, because organs basically only, you have a narrow, like, we're talking hours here to get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so unless there just so happened to be somebody who needed a heart and a liver at the exact same time, it would be unlikely that one donor, quote-unquote donor in this case, would have the heart and liver used.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So big picture, it's possible that it is one organ is one death. It's a possibility.
Well, yeah, it is. But as I hope everybody realizes, that there probably are exceptions. But the fact that if we think about the fact that 150 human beings, or whether it's 130 or 155, are being killed every day in China for their organs, it's just something that should drive anybody that's doing business in China or that's going to China or studying in China to do something, and we just can't let this go on. It's been going on far too long, and I like to believe that we're getting to a tipping point where they've had so much bad publicity about it, and they've had such feeble answers in reply. In fact, let me tell you, because when our first study came out way back in 2006, the Chinese embassy in Ottawa put out a statement saying these dummies, they got two of the cities in the wrong provinces. In effect, that's what they were saying. In other words, they couldn't find any way of challenging any of our substantive stuff. So they found that in doing a map we'd put one city in the wrong province in China. So they said, you know, this is all I could find of substance. And frankly, it's never got, they've never got much better at it. They just come out with, we're anti-China. I mean, we're trying to save lives in China. We're trying, we're this, we're that. We're trying to save Uyghur lives, Tibetan lives, Falun Gong lives, Christian lives. We're trying to save anybody in China who's a victim of conscience. And I think this point is getting out. I hope you have that impression, too, that there have been, there's a story out today that's in the British Medical Journal that I think will help. And I think there have been enough media and enough serious people who look at this that I think the intellectual argument is finished. The world, or at least the world that has an independent press, knows that this terrible crime against humanity is continuing to happen in China, across China.
Well, David, I'm curious, Communist Party aside, what's been the response to your work?
Well, it's interesting. I ran into somebody the other day that highly knowledgeable person of origin in China, and I gingerly approached her about and asked what she thought, and she basically said that she quickly switched the subject, and she said, well, you know, the Falun Gong community, they're not very credible. I don't believe that that's happening. So in other words, and I can give you another story.
How do you start a conversation to gently get into killing people for their organs? Like, how does that conversation go?
Well, it's usually quite short because the other person's eyes sometimes glaze over rather quickly. But what I said to her, as I said, you know, hi, nice to meet you, and so on. I said, I gave her my card and said, and she looked at it and she saw the International Coalition to End Organ Abuse in China, and she quickly came back with, well, you know, I don't think that's happening, or something to this effect. So then we chatted about it for a few minutes, and then she I don't know whether she ran away or she the subject ended in any event, because a person of origin in China does not really want to hear that, you know, that the former government of where she lived is killing victims of conscience for their organs. It's a pretty horrible thought.
Right, but on the plus side, if you're ever in a really awkward social situation and you want to end a conversation quickly.
Sorry, I know, sorry, forgive me, I know what you're going to say.
How dare you laugh about this, David?
I think it's pretty amazing that you can keep your sense of humor after decades of doing this.
Well, you honestly have to, and I'm Scottish origin too, and we Scots have, you know, we have good sense of humor about things. We try to find humor even where there is none, and I'm sure that
I mean, you guys do eat haggis.
Oh, of course we eat haggis. It's the best food in the world.
You know, I've always wanted to try it.
Oh no, it's delicious. Please do it on Robbie Burns Day whenever you can. It's delicious, a lot of people don't like it. I agree with you, but it is quite good. It's apparently very healthy too.
You know, in some ways, it's appropriate that we're talking about haggis on an organ harvesting episode.
Oh,
yes, yes, I agree. I was just thinking that actually, but I didn't want to interrupt.
Well, to anyone who's listening who's offended, as David said, when you have to have a sense of humor about this. Well, so don't get mad.
I mean, if they're listening to us, they probably know that we do this all the time.
Hey, I don't know how the kids are finding us these days.
That's true. You know, those kids and their experimental podcasts.
Oh yeah, it's a serious problem. Shelley.
Oh, I was just going to ask David. So the person you talked to, she had heard of organ harvesting before?
Oh, yes, indeed she had. And I think she probably knew a lot more about it than she wanted to admit to me in a casual conversation.
Well, so is this kind of is that a common response you get to organ harvesting, like defensiveness?
Well, I think it is. And it's actually, imagine if one of you had come from a country where this was happening. You're deeply ashamed of it.
Shelley is from China, FYI.
Oh, well, then she knows better than anybody. But you really, you want to believe that it's not happening. I know people do. And so I try to be, you know, understanding about it, and I don't let it ram it down people's throat. In fact, we had a seminar today at the a forum at the McDonald Laurier Institute in Ottawa, and it's a think tank, and
the McDonald's Institute?
Sorry?
The McDonald's Institute?
It's called the McDonald Laurier Institute. They're two of our best prime ministers, early prime ministers, and this is a think tank. And they had a
okay. Sorry, because I was just imagining this being held at like a fast food restaurant.
No.
Okay.
No. And somebody, a doctor got up and said, he was very eloquent. He said, listen, he's a member of the coalition, thank goodness, Dr. Barber. And he went on, he'd been a surgeon too, a transplant surgeon. And he went on about the fact that a lot of people from Taiwan were going for organs to China, as everybody knows, I think. And yet both parties agreed and they passed the best legislation in the world to stop it from happening. And so he got up and he paid great credit to the parliamentarians in Taiwan for doing this. But he asked me afterwards whether many people, it was a packed room, whether he thought, how many people in the room knew about organ pillaging in China. And my guess would be that they were a very well-informed group, that they probably all knew about it, although it didn't, he was the one who raised it, and I didn't raise it in my comments, and it wasn't raised prominently, but it is a reality that the country, as you I'm sure you realize, a lot of people from Taiwan were going because of hepatitis and so on. In fact, I often think of this, that the man that bothered me as much as anybody was a man who had gone from Taiwan to China maybe 10 years ago now, and to make a long story short, they ended up bringing him 8 sets of kidneys, and they, they do this tissue testing and that sort of thing, and none of the 8 sets would work. So they didn't actually try to put them into him. They just tested it in a vial or something, and they said these won't work for you. And so
that's an unusual number of kidneys.
Oh, I've never heard this many. And in fact, he went home for 3 months to Taiwan, and then he came back again, and they gave him this 4 more, totaling 8. And the 8th set of kidneys worked. But the thing that's so appalling about this is that 8 human beings were killed for their kidneys. Everyone knows you don't survive loss of both of your kidneys. So this man finally got 2 kidneys that worked, and 8 human beings, and probably they were, most if not all of them, were prisoners of conscience, were dead. And it was a military surgeon, Dr. Tan, T-A-N, because I have his name, who was doing this stuff for him in the number one people's hospital in Shanghai. So, I mean, this kind of thing just makes your blood curdle to think this is happening today.
Well, geez. I mean, now you touch on something I want to get into eventually, how governments around the world are reacting to this. But I just want to check. Now, you've said that a lot of Chinese people that you've spoken to kind of go on the defensive about this. What about your average non-Chinese person?
Well, it depends. I sit on planes with people. I've sat on planes with a doctor, I remember one time, who knew nothing about it. And it was, just completely unaware of it. And so I think a lot of people choose to, willfully not be aware of it because they sort of don't want to believe it's happening. And we're all, I think that's perfectly understandable human nature to do this. But when you've had I think we found 35 kinds of evidence that it was happening, and there have been a lot more since. And now we have this incredible thing that's happening to the Uyghur community in Xinjiang in the western China. I mean, million people in these terrible prisons, and as I quoted somebody the other day as saying that the only thing it compares with is the Holocaust, is what's happening there. And yet, where are the world's leaders on this issue? Some of them have been terrific, but the vast majority of them have chosen to just kind of keep their mouths shut and hope that it's not true. But it is true, and we all have a duty as human beings, wherever we live, to speak up against this. And thank goodness a lot of people have spoken up against it, but still not enough, as you I'm sure you know.
Do you think the average person knows about forced organ harvesting in China?
Well, if you look at the number of news articles that have been written, it's tens of thousands. I mean, there's sort of one or two major articles every day on it, it seems now. It's getting much better, I think. So I think there's a much higher level of awareness in all kinds of media. I think that people know. But still, there's I think it's about $10 billion a year the government of China is spending on propaganda to try to offset this kind of news that's coming out. And so they, you know, they put out statements saying, maybe we were doing it before, but we all stopped it on January the 1st of 2015 and this kind of stuff.
And that's only acknowledging that they did it from executed prisoners, not prisoners of conscience.
Yes, they've never admitted that they do it to prisoners of conscience. You're absolutely right, Chris. And that's one of the things that just as a human being, it just drives me crazy that they can't even bring themselves to admit that they're doing it to innocent men and women. And as I can say, I think, to you, and I often say, is that where is the medical, where is the transplantation society on this? Where's the World Health Organization on this?
Well, I was going to say, it's in a weird twist, this propaganda must be working because the World Health Organization has been promoting China for organ transplantation. That seems like a decision they might regret one day.
Well, I think so. And I think, as you all know, I won't mention any names, but the former head of the World Health Organization was from Hong Kong. And I have, in my mind, there's probably a connection between that and the we've discovered in talking with World Health Organization people over many years that we get very, very little help from them. And I just, again, what planet are they living on?
Oh, that's horrible.
It's hard to believe.
You know, it just struck me, like, we just did an episode about how Microsoft is doing research with Chinese military universities that are very likely being used in Xinjiang right now, where they are also potentially harvesting the organs of these Xinjiang Uyghurs. And it's shocking that these Western companies just don't. Why are they doing this?
Very good question. I wasn't aware of that. I'm sorry to hear it. Yeah. Geez,
well, you should watch more China Uncensored.
Yes. No. I know. I should. I every time I do, I'm glad I did. No. It's true. It's unfathomable that this can be happening, and what you just described can be happening. Well, how much money do these companies have to make before somebody says, maybe we should have a conscience in our, or we should have some ethics in what we do?
Well, Google specifically got rid of the don't be evil part from their company
motto.
So I think they have made the opposite decision.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm really sorry to hear that.
But it really frees them up, to give them so many more options of how to make money.
Oh, okay.
Well,
yeah, it's
so, actually, speaking of companies, there's a video clip that's going around on social media of a reporter asking the CEO of Volkswagen about whether they know about what's happening in Xinjiang with the Uyghurs being locked up in these camps. And the CEO was like, oh, I can't say anything about that. I'm not aware of it. And a lot of people were incensed. I've seen, like, China reporters just tweeting about how can companies be like this? Like, this has been in the news for months now. And my thought immediately was actually about organ harvesting. Because that's been, you know, your first report came out in 2006. And I was kind of like, my fear is that, you know, basically it would take years for companies to get called out about this kind of stuff because, you know, has anybody gotten in trouble for, you know, helping promote organ transplants in China? Like, it seems that people have just been not really mentioning it for 13 years.
Well, yes, but it's also true that a lot of people have mentioned it. I mentioned the doctor today at this gathering, and there were maybe almost 100 people that would have heard him very eloquently tell them what's happening, and he mentioned the Uyghurs too. So I think that at some point, and I mean, I think the Congress, the House of Representatives, has been quite helpful. I think the European Parliament has, individual parliaments. The Czech Parliament just passed, Senate just passed a resolution last week. We have a bill in our Parliament which is passed our Senate, and I hope will pass the House this week or two that will make it much harder for Canadians to go to China for organs. And so there is progress being made slowly, but I couldn't agree more that the companies that that go to China and just sort of turn a blind eye to everything. It's tragic. It's absolutely tragic.
Well, since we're on the topic now, what have governments around the world done in response to these findings?
Well, they've done some of them have done studies, some of them won't do studies, some of them, like we saw in the debate in the British Parliament recently, that the minister said there wasn't enough proof, or words to that effect. Well, there's a mountain of proof. It's just what he means is he just hasn't looked at any proof, and so it's easier to say there isn't enough proof than to say there is enough proof, but I'm not prepared to act on that proof. That's what that with that code language wants to, in my mind, and I'm delighted that people have taken them to task on that.
Well, I think the challenge that you have with the proof is just that, like, in order to understand organ harvesting and see that it's happening, you have to actually read a whole bunch of sort of smaller things that together clearly paint the picture, but there isn't like a clear smoking gun video of this being done.
Well, actually, there is I call it a smoking scalpel. There is a smoking scalpel, and it actually arose in the Uyghur part of China with he's the surgeon. Remember the surgeon?
He lived in London.
Enver Toti.
Yeah,
Enver Toti, forgive me. And Toti is described in many places in great detail, just exactly how he did take the heart out of a prisoner that had been shot in the wrong side of his chest to kill him. And I mean, if that isn't a smoking scalpel, I don't know what is.
That was
and
back then in the 90s, right?
Yeah, that was back in the 90s. What? So, of course, it's not happening anymore.
95, I believe. Yeah. And I think we had this Korean television station that went over, and I'm glad they're being heard from at this independent tribunal in Britain, too, because they had some pretty solid evidence. But you know, we all watch too much television, and we're all used to seeing the bad guy or woman, pull out a gun and shoot somebody. That isn't the way criminal trials work or the way crime works. You often don't have that kind of cowboy's approach
You were a criminal prosecutor, so how about you tell us a bit about like how that background has influenced your research into this?
Well, it has in the sense that, yes, let me give you an example, because we're Annie, who blew the whistle on this way back in 2006. She and I spent quite a lot of time with
just
her.
Just for people listening, can you give like a brief?
Annie's the woman who gave the press conference in Washington and basically was the first one to blow the whistle and say, "Listen, people are being killed in Sujiaten, China, for their organs in large numbers." And she also went on later to say that her husband was a surgeon who was taking the corneas out of, I think it was 2,000 Falun Gong practitioners' eyes over a 2-year period. And she told us, or it's in our report, that he broke down, he was having nightmares, and finally she got him to stop, and they both had been paid hundreds of thousands of U.S. dollars equivalent, and they both finally left China, and they're now she's in the States, and actually he's in Canada. But I mean, it's true that the hearsay evidence rule, it says that you're not supposed to hear her say this; you're supposed to hear him say this because he did those terrible operations. And yes, this is hearsay evidence, which is not admissible in the court, I guess, in the U.S. or in Canada or other places. But okay, that's one piece of evidence. But we've got, as I said, we've got 30. Even if you don't take her evidence as being admissible in court, we've got 35 other kinds of evidence. Toti, for example, and we've got his evidence. We've got the evidence of people phoning to hospitals all across China and being told, and we've recorded the conversations and had them translated by independent interpreters, and saying basically things like, "We've got, we can get you Falun Gong organs if you come here to our hospital for these transplants." So, at some point, any I think fair-minded person listening to this 35 kinds of evidence would say, yes, this is obviously happening, and it's happening beyond any reasonable proof that it's happening. But there, most people we find are the people that are accused of being, they accuse us of everything. We're stooges for the Falun Gong, we're stooges for this, we're stooges for that. They won't read the evidence, independent evidence that we've compiled as independent persons on a voluntary basis. They just choose to parrot the party state line and make statements like you know, Matus and Kilgore are stooges for the Falun Gong.
I mean, but there's so many pages of evidence. It's, you know, it's hard to expect people to just read so much.
Well, they don't have to. Yes, that's true. But maybe I think like the World Medical Association or the Transplantation Society could maybe. And by the way, the Transplantation Society is based in Canada, in Montreal. Maybe they could ask one doctor to sit down and read all of this stuff, and then somebody who has intellectual integrity, and maybe he or she could read it for them if they haven't got the time to do it, and could maybe give them some advice on that. I'm very happy to tell you that recently, in fact, the doctor, Dr. Barber, who was there today, and another doctor from Toronto, and I met with a member from the Canadian Medical Association, and we went over this, and I think we've had a real breakthrough with them. But it's, you know, you never know whether it's an article in a medical journal or whether it's a program on CNN or a BBC or something that opens somebody's eyes. But I think an awful lot of people's eyes are being opened these days, and I believe this is going to have results. And I give the Canadian bill as an example. We couldn't get that through Parliament for many years, but now it looks, I'm optimistic that the bill is going to pass in the next couple of weeks, pass its final reading. It will be the law of Canada.
Well, so let's go back to what governments around the world are doing. So that's something Canada has done. I know, I believe Israel was one of the first countries to ban organ tourism to China.
Yeah, Israel was definitely was the first one who did it. It was Dr. Jay Lavie, who's a heart surgeon, and as you probably all know very well, he one day the penny finally dropped for him when one of his patients said, "I'm going to China for a heart." And Dr. Lavie said to him, "Well, when are you going for this heart operation?" And he said, "I'm going in 3 weeks." And then Dr. Lavie, as a heart surgeon, realized exactly what was going to happen. The so-called donor was going to be killed in order that his patient could have a new heart. And then when the guy came back from, I think it was a man, came back from China, he had a new heart. And Dr. Lavie was so incensed about this that he rallied the transplant profession and then the Knesset, and the law was passed. And Israel was one of the first to move on this.
You know, I've heard that story before, but I always wondered, like, did he tell that patient, like, what was going on? Like, what was his reaction?
Well, I think he doesn't, he's, I guess there's doctor-patient privilege or something. He doesn't go into all the horrible details, but I think he was so offended that a patient of his would do this. And I suspect Dr. Lavie tried to explain to him what was going to happen, but the guy went, or the patient went anyway, and then the result was that this terrible situation stopped in Israel, and thank goodness a number of other countries have done similar things. Not always the same, but they've done similar things.
Well, like what other countries?
Well, it's Norway has done taken some significant steps. Spain, I believe, is one of the leaders in kinds of things they do. They basically end organ tourism. This is an example I often use, is that I was in Australia once, and I better not name the province, I might get this person into trouble. But she told me that nobody was going from her state in Australia for organs that is stopped. And what had happened, just so you know, is that the Australian Broadcasting Corporation had put on a whole lot of broadcasts about this, and they talked to Ethan Gutman and I think David Matus and myself, and they had really got it across to people in across Australia that this is what was happening. You know, somebody was going to be murdered so that you could have a new kidney. And this, thank goodness, it bothered Australians enough that at least from one state, and I hope all states, nobody goes, or extremely few, I hope that means, you know, one or two, goes from Australia now to China for organs. And when people become aware of what actually is going on, most of them will change their policy, what they'll do and what they won't do.
So what would you like to see governments do?
Well, I'd like to see us all go the route of Taiwan and basically say that, look, if a I'm told, Chris, that there are actually brokers wandering around hospitals in some countries that sort of go up to hospital people in hospital beds and say, well, if you need a new organ, I can get you one. And then if they have enough money, which they, I guess some do, then they go through a broker and a surgeon in a hospital in China, and this person can go over there. But the
Take a heart, for example. Like, if you need a new heart, what would that mm-hmm. process be like for someone in the West who needs a new heart, like in terms of how much it costs and what actually happens?
Well, the price seems to go up and down. And in fact, it looks like there were cheaper prices for organs for Taiwanese than other countries. But let's suppose
that's unfair.
Yeah. Well, let's say that the price is $160,000 for a new heart. And I'm just using that as a hypothetical, but that's the kind of range we're talking about. At one point, they posted the prices on their websites. But of course, since all of this investigation started, they've stopped that. So if you come up with the cash, then you fly over, and it's amazing how many people from countries like U.S. and Canada go to it's the number one people's hospital in Shanghai, although they're now 700 plus hospitals where these organ transplants are being done. You check in, and they come and they do the tissue testing and the blood testing and so on, and then the computer shows who's a match for say you, Chris, and some
Don't
poor guy out
me.
In work camp,
like
forced
this.
Labor camp by number. We at one point we were convinced there were at least 350 of them. There may be more now. There may be less, but. Some poor guy is dragged out of a dormitory where he's with 16 other people. And we've talked to people who've got out of these terrible work camps. And then he's given some, I think it's potassium they're giving them now. And then his heart is removed. It's flown to you in Shanghai by the People's Liberation Army airplane. And you're given a new heart. And you come back to New York, if that's where you are, and you've got a new heart. And somebody's been basically murdered so that you could have... You could have a new heart.
I'd say that's heartless, but it's not.
Well, I know over the past couple of years, the scale of transplantation in China has exploded. They've been building, not just average hospitals doing more transplantation, but they've been building mega hospitals devoted to transplantation at a time when they have no explanation of where they're getting the organs.
Yep. Oh, they come up, you've probably seen them, they talk about need for humor. They come up with the most crazy stories you've ever seen. You'd have to be dumb. Well, what they do is they say now that they're persuading patients who are terminally ill to donate their organs. And well, you can imagine how they decide who's terminally ill. You've got a scratch on your wrist, so you're terminally ill. And this is when you don't have ethics in the medical profession or in the government or anything, this is the kind of thing that can happen. This is why I'm so terrified about what's happened to the Uyghurs, is that these are people that are, as you probably all read, that they're being treated well, like the Holocaust. So do you think anybody's going to worry about taking an organ from a healthy man, a Uyghur man or woman who's one of these terrible hospitals? I don't think it would slow them up for a nanosecond, the inhumanity of what they're doing. So this is a whole new market for them. They've got, and I'm told that a great many of these people, and these million people, or whatever the number is now, are DNA tested, and that just then becomes, you get, instead of going to a forced labor camp, you go to one of these hospitals, and they find the poor victim donor in those hospitals.
Jeez,
and
guess what we just found out on that episode we did about Microsoft and working with Chinese military universities? We found out about a Yale professor who was directly giving DNA samples to the Ministry of Public Security.
No.
Yeah. And there was another case of who was selling DNA samplers?
Thermo Fisher, was it? Thermo Fisher was selling DNA sequencers, I believe, to
directly
authorities
to the Xinjiang
government until earlier this year.
It's just awful. It's unspeakable.
Would you say?
And so, what happened to the Yale professor, by the way?
I think he was like, I didn't know what they were doing it for. It's like, you know, if you're a Yale professor, you should be smart enough to know what working with the Ministry of Public Security in an authoritarian regime means. But so he kind of played dumb and like no longer does it. But
so, David, are there some red flags that, I mean, in your research, you've seen the pattern of what happened with the Falun Gong practitioners and the Tibetans and Christians and like Uyghurs in the 90s. Are there some red flags about what's happening with the Uyghurs now?
Well, yes, there is. People who do studies on genocide have, and I'm sure you've all seen these too, they point out that there are levels. The first thing you do is you start to criticize. That's exactly what happened to Falun Gong. Then you start to, well, there's eight stages to it. You know, you dehumanize them, and then you make them propaganda. And I gather the propaganda across China and the media, state media, is 24/7, to the point where I often tell the story that a friend of mine was in Tiananmen Square a few years ago with her mother, and their guide was with them. And when the Falun Gong came up, and the guide said, "Oh, the Falun Gong! Oh, they eat their children, don't they?" So that's what happens when you have to demonize and then dehumanize people to the point where people will say, "Oh, well, maybe you should take their organs. They're horrible. They're horrible people." And that's, of course, what happened in Rwanda during the genocide there. It's what happened in Nazi Germany. It's what's happening today in China to the Falun Gong, and I very much believe the Uyghur community and to Tibetans.
So you criticize, you dehumanize, you demonize. That's only like three steps out of eight. I mean, I'm not taking notes or anything, but I'm just like, what else do we see?
Well, it's pretty. The distinctions get pretty narrow. But I mean, I've sat in lectures where somebody's gone through, the history of what happened to the Tutsi community in Rwanda, and they basically ended up at the eighth level where they said Tutsis are cockroaches. So you know what you do to a cockroach, and that's what happened when 800,000 Tutsis were murdered in a 4-month period. So
it's
amazing
how effective some of this this propaganda is. Like, I have in front of me a quote from the former Norwegian MP. This is recent. Get this. He said, "The U.S. has twisted an economic success story into a narrative about a race for world domination. It criticizes Chinese detention camps for Muslims, which are intended to protect against terrorism." That's a former Norwegian MP.
You wonder how people can be so stupid, don't you? Especially MPs, when they're supposed to know better. And
Well, there's one former MP that knows better.
Well. Yeah, well, no, there are a lot of MPs. I'm actually encouraged by how many MPs are and doctors. What we've discovered is you've got to get the doctors on side, and then the doctors, they can get the surgeons on side, and then they quickly, once that happens, they can quickly get the MPs on side for.
Does it help you being a former parliament member to like have that street cred, I guess?
Well, no, in fact, I was saying to you earlier that it's the fact that I was a prosecutor, and that people, I think, they may not like prosecutors, but they know that we're fair, that we don't, well, I hope they know we're fair, that we don't charge somebody with a crime unless there's a lot of evidence available, and that, you know, and that the evidence is admissible, and that the evidence, if accepted by a jury, would result in a guilty plea. So we don't charge people frivolously.
So, David, you're basically a lawyer chasing an ambulance for the right reasons.
Chasing an ambulance for the right reasons. I've never heard that before. Only you could do that, Chris. Well, we're trying. I'm not supposed to laugh. That's not supposed to be funny, but it is funny. Okay. We're trying to stop mass murder is what we're trying to do, and you are, and everyone else who I hope watching your program goes out and talks to their member of Congress is trying to do the same thing.
Well, that's a good point. We've talked about what governments can do. What can the average person do?
They can do a lot. They started a coalition against human trafficking here in Ottawa, for example, a community group, mostly young people. And when you get young people behind something like this, or students and whatnot, it makes a huge difference. So we now have in Ottawa, we have a very active coalition. They're fighting, you know, forced labor fighting human organ transplants, and they're acting on many fronts.
But, and that's something anyone around the world can join?
Of course, anybody can start their own. They can just look up the Google the Ottawa Coalition Against Human Trafficking, or just Ottawa Human Trafficking would probably come up pretty quickly on Google, and you can see what they've done, and they're really they're trying to do a lot, and this has now become one of their focuses is organ trafficking, and I'm delighted to hear that. I wish we could get groups going like that in every major city or small city. Well, that's one way they can go after their of course a member of Congress or the MP, and they can go after the members of the assemblies in the states, because they have health jurisdiction, and they could probably do something at the state level. And some of the states have passed resolutions. I don't know how many of them have passed laws to bar people from using transplant tourism, but I guess because some people say, you know, it's criminal and therefore it has to be the federal government or the national government, and others say, well, you can do it at the state level. Well, do whatever is within the jurisdiction of the state if you're at the state level, and go to the federal level if you're at the federal level. But do something. Just go and have an appointment with your member of Congress and tell him or her what's going on. You can get, if you go on our International Coalition website, you can give them the website, and they'll find an awful lot of information on that. You have access to that, I'm sure, don't you? That International Coalition website.
Yeah, we can put a link in the YouTube description.
Can you say what the website is?
Well, sure. Well, one way of doing it, I often do it, is it's called ETAC. But if you just go www.david-kilgour.com. The link to the website for the coalition comes up right at the top of my website, and you can go directly to there from the top link on the website. And then once you get in there, as I'm sure you know, there's just a huge amount of stuff that's very, very carefully done, and not to waste anybody's time, and it's I think it's very compelling, persuasive stuff. And if somebody wants to sign a petition, they can do that. If they want to get a speaker to come to their town or city or village, we can probably do that. They could maybe start a chapter in their city. There are just a million things that people can do, according to what their own situation is.
So, David, I'm curious how you got started with researching organ harvesting.
Well, it was the Falun Gong community used to come and see me in the constituency office in Edmonton, and then here in Ottawa, and I was getting increasingly concerned by what they were telling me.
This is when you were an MP?
No, this is when I was the Secretary of State for, okay, well, I guess Africa, and then later for Asia Pacific. So we were going on these trade missions to China. Can you imagine? And I'm going over there thinking, what on earth is going on here? But as you can imagine, I wasn't exactly allowed to go off and conduct my own. In fact, I'm very glad I didn't, because as Edward McMillan Scott discovered, he went over to China and he started asking questions about this. And one of the people he talked to, a Falun Gong practitioner there, disappeared and was never seen from again. And McMillan Scott, who's a former member of the European Parliament, was terrified that by talking to him, he had exposed this person to a terrible danger. And then the letter from Massengai, which I hope you've all seen, I'm sure you have all seen that wonderful movie.
Yeah, I've seen that movie.
Check out A Letter from Massengai.
It's just—it's one of the most moving movies I've seen, and as films I've seen, and that just lays it all out so well, and yet, one thing kind of led to another, and when I didn't run in 2006 in the election, Matus and I were asked to look into this matter. We thought it was going to last a few months, and little did we know we'd still be doing it. How many years? Well, it is 2006.
13 years.
Wow. Yes. So, but we're not going to stop. We're going to keep going at this, like I hope everybody is, until this terrible thing happens, stops. And I think it is going to stop. I think they're getting so much bad publicity that how can you trade with a country that kills its own people for their vital organs?
Well, there's a good answer for that. They have lots of money. Such a big market.
Of course it is. But at some point, human beings, in my experience, will say that is simply not going to continue.
I know, and, but if it were like Burkina Faso that were killing people for organs, people would be like, oh, well, we're just not going to trade with them. Right? But the mm-hmm. fact that it's China, it's like, well, like, yeah, they're killing people for organs, but there's like a billion potential consumers.
Oh, well, I don't think it goes there. I think what they do is they just say, I don't believe they're killing people for organs.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Shelley. I couldn't agree with you more. And I've heard that so many times. And I remember going to a foreign ministry and with David Matus, and the two of us agreed that we would not try to get too excited. We'd be calm. We'd be careful. We'd be say, well, have you read this? Would you read this, please? And of course, we knew what the game was being played. Is that this guy just, he was the China desk, of course, and he just didn't want anything to be said that would maybe cause him to have to do something differently. And fortunately, things change, and in the country, I'm thinking things are changing quite quickly. And in fact, it was Australia, so I'm really pleased how quickly things are changing.
Have you ever been told outright that they just can't touch this issue? Like, either from, like, a government or a media?
In fact, I'm glad you raised that, Shelley. I was told that by Amnesty International.
And really?
Because Amnesty was one of the first places we went in Empire State Building in New York City, as you know. And then we went to London. Their head office is in London, as everybody knows. And we went to them very quickly. Finally, because we wondered why we couldn't get anywhere with them, why they wouldn't take it up, and they kept saying we need independent observation. Well, how are you going to find an independent observer saying that there's an operation going on in this hospital room and somebody's being killed for their organs? So finally somebody told us, I won't mention his name, but I believe him, he said, look, we felt that if we took up this issue, it would hurt our capacity to get them to stop capital punishment in China. So for about 7 or 8 years, we went through a lot of problems with Amnesty, but I'm happy to tell you that the Amnesty is now on side. I'm not saying that they're one of the best advocates for this issue, but at least they're not going around saying to people that they don't have enough evidence, because they have a mountain of evidence, and so they don't try to say that. And I'm a supporter of Amnesty, but on this issue, for 7 or 8 years they really let the side down.
Wow, that's very disappointing to hear. Mm-hmm.
David, in your research, is organ harvesting still happening at the level that it was when you were still looking into this?
Oh, I think it's far, far greater now. All of our charts, if you look at our update in 2016, you'll see that the number of hospitals doing it, the number of beds that are being available, and the number of surgeons that are being trained and nurses and all these things are all escalating rapidly. So no, the trend is all in the wrong direction. If I'd be might do much better if it was going down, but no, it's clearly going up. And we lay all that out with charts and all kinds of things. And we have, I'm not sure, I think we have 2,400 footnotes in our update. So we know that if we get one tiny little detail wrong, somebody's going to say, you see, you got this wrong. So we know we have to be precise and very careful on everything we say. And our update is that way. I think nobody has ever challenged any factual matters in the update, to my knowledge.
So in the time that the international community has really not done enough, the situation has not just stayed the same, it's accelerated, it's gotten worse.
Absolutely, yeah. We figured it's bringing in about, what was the estimate, was it $8 or $9 billion are coming into China from organs, from you know, the pilots get paid, the nurses get paid, the surgeons, the police, the hospitals, everybody gets paid. So it's a huge amount of money that's coming into the system, the medical system, because of this vile industry that they're running.
Wow, and I think I know how I can pay off my student loan debt.
That was a little dark, Chris.
Student loans are dark.
I mean, I know how you felt. This whole time I've been thinking about, like, organ harvesting jokes and then mostly not saying them.
Thank you for your restraint.
They're probably better left unsaid, aren't they?
Thank you, David.
We did that China Uncensored episode about mm-hmm. the tribunal that was held in London. And, like, for us, it's because we're always trying to make jokes. So the challenge is, you know, coming up with jokes that are, like, I guess... the correct type of joke, right? Because, like, you don't want to make a joke about a serious thing that's happening, but you do need to make jokes. So, like, how do you kind of – Shelley came up with some good punchlines.
You need to make it a little more palatable for people, right. I guess.
Yeah, we're not making jokes for the sake of jokes.
I couldn't agree with you more, Shelley. You've got to somehow – you've got to suddenly have a sweetener in the sense of getting someone so they'll listen to you, and then you can make your points and then ask them to do something. I'm surprised how many people go away keep going back to this doctor today. He went and he talked to something like 30 or 40 of his surgical friends. And he said, not many of them would do anything, but boy, he's become a real crusader for this. And he's really going after the medical profession. And that's the key. Please always try to get some from the medical profession on the side, because they can do a huge amount.
So inside China, it's gotten worse, but internationally, things are getting better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think so.
Well, then I think this is a great opportunity for everyone listening to, you know, take David's advice and actually contact their representatives or try and create their own coalitions. Like, this is the time to take action, because it's only going to get worse if people continue to do nothing.
Absolutely.
So, David, thank you for all your great work. If somebody wants to learn more about you or what you do, where should they go?
Well, yeah, the website works pretty well, and there is a way you can communicate with it. Actually, the best way of doing it would be to go to the ETAC, the International Coalition Against Organ Transplant Abuse in China, and you can link to that very easily go through my website if they like it. If they don't want to try to look up ETAC, you do have the way to access it very quickly.
Yeah, and do you have a Twitter handle you might want to share with
no,
us?
No, I don't use Twitter. I use Facebook, but I'm at my limit, unfortunately, 5,000 friends, so I can't take any more. And I don't use Twitter. I tried it when an MP, and after 3 months, I think I was ready to pull all my hair out.
So the website is www.david-kilgore.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kilgore. But Kilgore in U.S. is spelled O-R-E, but in Canada it's spelled in Scotland it's spelled O-U-R.
So K-I-L-G-O-U-R.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you. Thank all of you for doing it. I much enjoy it. Bye for now.
All right. Bye, David. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Well, so how are you guys feeling after that?
I am genuinely shocked about the Amnesty International thing and a little bit more cynical about the world.
I'm actually feeling good that after, you know, so many years, there are at least a number of groups that are really trying to, you know, raise awareness and make a difference. ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, the one where they interviewed you last year, mm-hmm. about Xi Jinping becoming presidentator.
It's only a year ago.
But so, like, as David Kilgore said, like, they're actually, you know,
that's
broadcasting
true. Okay.
Some stuff. So this is good. There is legitimately some progress on this.
Yeah, I guess, like, I see, like, people frustrated that the Uyghur issue isn't getting more play after only a few months of being publicized. And I'm like, well, as somebody who's been looking at human rights stuff in China, you know, almost since I was, like, 6 years old, like...
the Falun Gong have been trying to get their story out for 2 decades.
Yeah, everybody forgot about Tiananmen Square. Like, it's been going on for a long time.
Your first political protest was actually a Tiananmen Square protest, right?
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's these things take a long time.
So, I don't know. I feel like now is the time. And so I really would say to anyone listening, like, this is something you can make an impact on. You don't have to host a hilarious China podcast, one of the best China podcasts in the world.
Top three, alphabetically.
You don't have to host a YouTube channel. You don't have to be a, you know, former Canadian MP and do, you know, in-depth research. Like, you can do something. You know, call your representative, start a group, tell someone.
I mean, the telling someone thing, I think, is pretty important. And, like, everybody can do that.
I'm just imagining David Kilgore, like, every time he flies somewhere, which is presumably like a dozen times a year, like just sitting next to someone on a plane being like, hey, by the way, like there's this thing happening in China. Did you know?
I mean, I feel like that happens to me constantly. I'll be at a party and suddenly I'm talking about like Chinese human rights abuses to somebody I just met.
You are lots of fun at parties, Shelley.
I'm great at parties.
And the crazy thing about this is one of the people, one of the few people who have actually been speaking about this for years has been Alex Jones. Please, don't let Alex Jones be the main voice of this.
You know, I don't think that helps the credibility thing that David Kilgore was talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. So please, loyal listeners, take up the mantle. To arms. All right.
And if you don't know what to do, I think the website that David Kilgore mentioned, we've put a link to it on the version that's on YouTube of this podcast. They have a lot of resources and things like that to get you started.
We need a better website that unifies all of our things. Hey, Matt, I have one more thing for us to add to our list of things to do.
Oh, put links to all the things on our website.
Totally revamp the website.
Yes. All the things.
What would we call it?
The World Uncensored.
China-America...
America-China Unscriptable.
Beautiful.
Thank you. And thank you to everyone listening. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Canesta.
We'll talk to you next time. And don't forget to leave us a good review on iTunes. And do something about organ harvesting, you lazy, no good... No good, Nick.
Boy, Chris, you should be a motivational speaker.